Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are you doing this week post-college football playoffs?
Great, Jimmy. How are you? Officially the off season, and we're almost into February. That's kind of weird.
Shortened it. Yes. We're going to get to those recommended changes in the playoff model. I think they did a lot of things right. There were a lot of things good, but in the first year, there's always going to be some tweaks that could be done. But before we get there, Andy, I did want to talk to you about the playoffs as they did exist this year. It looked like at first a blowout with Ohio State, Notre Dame. Notre Dame came back, made a game of it. Just your thoughts on the championship game.
Yeah, the best team won, right? Like, Ohio State was always, even from the beginning of the year, they were the best team money could buy. They invested the most in the transfer portal and roster retention and building up depth and stockpiling talent. That was never sort of an afterthought. Was like, hey, when it comes to talent-wise, pretty much nobody has as much available to them as Ohio State. So they were always the most talented and deepest roster. And if you think about it, Jimmy, when you play 17 football games, right? Like, that's what those you had to play to win it. That depth matters. Think about beginning of the year and all those offensive line issues and how much they had to work through. So that was part of the journey. Despite Ryan Day's Michigan moment, where he tried to beat Michigan at their own game and, you know, swallowed a bunch of coaching stupid pills, they were given a second life. They were given a second chance at this. Think about it. In the 14 college football playoff scenario, Ohio State doesn't get a second crack. Ryan Day probably doesn't have a job, right? So at the end of the day, when I look at this, Pennsylvania native, the quarterback position and Will Howard, what he did over the course of four games and in that championship game, particularly in that first half against Notre Dame, he performed at another level, and he literally elevated this team, which was, they didn't give him the keys to the game against Michigan. If you look back at it, I think Chip Kelly made a very intentional decision to hand this offense pretty much over to Will Howard and let everything else spin off of it and let him be the catalyst instead of just a sidecar riding along. So there were times during this season where Ohio State's offense looked dysfunctional. It was not during the four games of the college football playoff, Jimmy. And that was the difference maker.
Here are the conflicting arguments or sides of the debate, Andy, and I've seen it both ways. One school of thought is during the regular season, Ohio State lost its two biggest games, the matchup against Oregon, two top three teams, I believe, at the time, and they lost a rivalry game to Michigan. Any other year, that would have eliminated them from the four-team playoff. And you also had this, the thought then is, it cheapens the regular season because all of a sudden losing those two games didn't matter because they got into the playoffs this year. The other side of the argument is, is that second opportunity that by having 12 teams in it makes more sense.
Yeah, I think that's what inherently the college football playoffs is designed for, is opportunity, right? Like, opportunity and second chances that a 14 playoff didn't provide. So to me, that's an irrelevant argument. And I get the, does the regular season matter? I think in year one, what you saw from the college football playoffs is, it doesn't hurt the regular. This is my thought. It doesn't hurt or cheap in the regular season, they're not tied together. I don't see them as tied together, Jimmy. It's not like, you know, while the regular season and the college football playoffs are tied together, they're kind of two separate paths. You get to play your regular season out, and the games matter more, especially with the two power conferences, and you get to play, it goes all the way through championship games, right? Like, you get to play for a championship at level one in your conference, and you get a schedule that leads you up to that. Depending on your performance and you make the college football playoffs, okay, that's a new season. You're starting over. Everybody's 0-0 when you start the college football playoff. No matter where you're seated, everybody's 0-0. It starts again. So I see them as separate. Like, the regular season leads you. Does your performance get you into the second chance? Does it get you an invite to have a second chance and be 0-0? But part one of your season leads you to, can you play for a college? Can you play for a conference championship? Look at Penn State. Lost to Ohio State, fighting the tail of the dog. Ohio State, they end up playing for a championship. Heck of a football game, by the way. And they nearly won. That's all you can ask for. You want that opportunity. So I'm not sure they're tied together, in my opinion. I look at them as separate. And I thought the regular season was somewhat more exciting and more engaging than ever, Jimmy, on so many levels. And the college football playoffs kind of had some work to do to get me to that level.
Andy, I'm an advocate of the expanded playoffs. I am. Let me play devil's advocate a little bit. When you say they're independent events, the regular season and the playoffs, that's a bit of the argument of, well, then that cheapens the regular season because it isn't as important anymore as if because you're starting from scratch with a 12-team playoff. The only thing, I don't believe that it cheapened the regular season in that it made it less exciting. No. Because of 12 teams potentially making it, a lot more games were critical, were important.
Sure.
The only argument I could have is, if I'm an Oregon fan, I'm really disappointed how it played out. I had an undefeated regular season. Most everybody else, correct me if I'm wrong, except of the top teams, Notre Dame had a one-loss season, but a non-conference schedule, no conference championship game. But essentially, Oregon was like two games better than everybody else in the regular season, and that all got thrown away in one game because of the way the draw worked, and they lost to Ohio State in their first game. That's the argument for it.
Yeah, the seedings need some work, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But that was a seeding thing. But Jimmy, come on, man. That's your performance. You go to a second season, and yeah, okay, Ohio State was playing well, but I don't know if it would have mattered who you played that game. You have to show up if you're that team. You're the undefeated team. You could have been playing Arizona State or SMU even. If you play like that against SMU, you're losing. Ohio State performed at a high level in that game, and I know you want to get a point in. Ohio State did perform at a high level, but it wasn't like stupid or ridiculous. It was that Oregon was so unprepared and unready to play that football game. They were 80% of the problem in that. So,
I think it's the other way. I think Ohio State was just that good in that game. But now I'll counter my previous argument. Oregon, yeah, they beat Ohio State, but they did it at home and just barely escaped with that win. One could argue that Ohio State would have won in Columbus and Ohio State would have won on a neutral field. So I think it's also fair. Okay, after giving the Oregon side of the argument. But Andy, let's look at the game itself a little bit between Ohio State and Notre Dame, because you and I hadn't talked about it yet. I think there was very little doubt Ohio State was the better team there. Yeah. I think there was little doubt that Notre Dame deserved to be there. But absolutely. Talking about the game itself and a couple decisions, I just want to get your take on.
Sure.
First of all, was Notre Dame down 2 touchdowns, over 9 minutes left in the game, 4th and goal from the 9. Their decision was to kick a field goal. Wanted to get your take on that decision.
Yeah, you have to cut the deficit there, right? Like, this is where I get, you know, there's some analytics involved, and to me it comes down to the moment, right? Like, you have to get the score under a certain point. Do you think in that moment that you have the right play call, and does your football team have the momentum to score? In other words, what are your football eyes telling you? That's part of coaching decision. I think it's lost on those who watch football and don't really understand it. I'm going to say that and be kind. Like, I think when I was watching, I'm like, oh man, I'd love to go for it here, but I don't think we're going anywhere. Like, it's just that moment. I think Marcus Freeman made the right decision. It's the right coaching call, in my opinion, just because of the way his offense was moving the ball at that moment and what they had done on the first 3 downs to get to 4th and goal. I'm like, Ohio State had pushed back. Take what you can get and move on. And it's a sticky one because it's like, well, it's the coward decision. No, it's the we're going to live to fight another day decision, and not out of I'm playing the percentages or odds. It's what my in that moment and in that decision moment, what my football gut tells me. That's what the head coach is paid to do.
And Andy, I think a lot of folks would say, oh, in hindsight, they should have gone for it. I'll go the other way on this. In hindsight, I think it was a good decision.
Right.
Because he still got to the point where with 2 minutes, 45 seconds left, he had Ohio State in a 3rd and 11 situation.
Yeah.
You've got to think that your team could make the stop on 3rd and 11. Okay. And you get the ball back 1 score behind, you're 8 points behind. And had your kicker made the chip shot, you would have been 5 points behind.
Correct.
You make a 3rd and 11 stop, you get a possession to win the national championship. So I think even in hindsight, it was a great decision on his part.
I agree. 100% agree. You stockpile the points now for later, right? Like, and his offense wasn't telling him go for it. That's the part of the decision that I think gets lost.
And you also had an Ohio State team that's very good in the defense, that's good in the red zone. All right, that's it for quarter number one. When we come back, Andy will make some tweaks to the college football playoff system. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing. Built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. Quarter number two of our show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about the college football playoffs that culminated last Monday. Ohio State with the win over Notre Dame. It's worth noting one more time, Andy. I did this earlier in the week. Ohio State was an 8.5-point favorite. They were up 8 points when they had that last possession. That little field goal at the end, it made a winner out of several people who had bet the Buckeyes. That's me, like Andy. You. Like me. All right, let's move on. I thought the 12-team playoff, Andy, was great. You know what the criticisms were, the early blowouts. I don't think that was a big deal.
No,
I do think some things could be tweaked to make it better. Now, I think it's also important to point out they're on this college football playoff system is on a 2-year agreement right now.
Correct.
Which means there's only one more year remaining. Any major changes probably won't be made for another year. Any change that they would make for this coming year would have to be a unanimous decision, which means it's got to be to everybody's benefit. Right. And some of these changes aren't to a benefit of everybody. So that might be different. But taking a look at it, Andy, I think the biggest criticism, and I go along with this one, is not the buy for conference, not the automatic bid for conference champions, but the seeding that allowed Arizona State and Boise State to be seeded third and fourth and get the first round buys.
Yeah, the seedings are the biggest bugaboo, right, Jimmy? That was part of the way this season played out. And, you know, like Ohio State not making it to the Big Ten championship game, right? That's sort of one example right there. Georgia winning the SEC, right? Like that was a little bit seeding problematic as well. But essentially, what they have set up, and I don't think they're going to get a unanimous vote to change it for next year. So we're kind of going to have to deal with this initial seeding system that got us out of the room and got us to a 12-team college football playoff. And this set up, that's the sort of sandwich I think you're going to have to sort of eat and swallow for another year. It might be a little cleaner in the two power conferences. The Big Ten and the SEC are very strong dictators and players in this. Maybe a little cleaner path to conference championship. I don't know how that would affect the seedings or how it would change anything. I mean, from a Penn State perspective, it certainly was advantageous for them.
Well, Andy, the issue with, you know, dealing with the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten is they ended up with the number one and two seeds, and that was fine. No issue with that. It was the Boise State and Arizona State getting the 3 and 4 seed when in the college football playoff seeding, they were, I don't know, 9th, 10th, 11th in the seeding.
Correct.
So, you know, they certainly didn't earn that. But it bears repeating that stuff, things that I've been saying for weeks on this show is when they came up with this plan, there was still a Pac-12. And there was still Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12.
Correct. It was different.
Right. And you would have had, you know, four of the top five or four of the top six teams in the country getting those top four seeds, not teams that were like 10th or 11th.
Can I say one thing? We're probably not going to get a seeding change next year because of the two-year contract, right? So we know that. Here's what I think the College Football Playoff Committee needs to do. And they know this. They know they have to change that. They're not that blind, right? They're not like NCAA stupid. But, sorry. I think what they need to do, Jimmy, is they need to come up with their options and seeding plans. Not whole chapter and verse, but at least where they're going and what they're doing, and get some of that out to college football fans and the players, the schools, right? Like by the players, I don't mean the football players. They need to make their plan clear going forward so that all the conversation next year isn't about the crappy seeding process.
Well, Andy, here's the issue that's going to happen going forward. They've begun their meetings together, and some information has come out that what the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten want, expand it from 12 teams to 14, but they want like four automatic bids.
Guaranteed bids. I know.
Guaranteed bids for their conferences. To me, Andy, what they're doing would create the exact same fault as they have right now with the seeding, where a team from the ACC who doesn't deserve to be seeded third or fourth, and a team from the Big 12 that doesn't deserve to be seeded third and fourth, but the rules create that. What's going to happen next if they create those four automatic bids per conference? hey, there could be a year where the Big Ten is down. You know, you have two teams at the top who are really good, really deserve it, and then the rest is just not that good. But guess what? Two of those not-so-good teams will get bids, again, because the rules force it, as opposed to saying, let the committee do their job, which was to rank the deserving teams that to be in the playoffs.
I think they can do it this way, Jimmy. This will be my final thought, because the seeding makes my head spin. Your conference championship matters, which means your regular season matters. You win your conference championship, A, you're guaranteed to be in the college
automatic
football
berth,
playoffs.
Yes.
And B, you get a home game. That gives them the bandwidth to make them 1-8, right? Well, they can even give them a bye. You could give them either you get in and you either get a bye or home game. Either one. That means you're one of those 1-8, right? That's 1-8.
My take on it, Andy, is if you and you're saying 1-8, which would mean probably going. I don't think they should go from 12 to 14. I think they should go from 12 to 16.
That's a different conversation.
So the first round, you know, if you're in the top eight, you get a home game, because there is even some argument about does the bye really help you or does it make you rusty after being off for several weeks? Don't care. But if this is about the fans, now we at Penn State experienced a home playoff game, which, Andy, it was pretty special. The crowd was special. A lot of people thought, oh my goodness, it's so cold. What will it be like? It was special. And I wasn't there, but watched on TV what was happening in South Bend, in Austin, in Columbus. It was the same way. It was a pretty special event that the people who got those top seeds, like Oregon and Georgia, their fans didn't get a home playoff game. I think they deserve that, Andy. And I think doing this 1-16 with the top eight first round getting a home playoff game. So we both gave our take on the seeding, Andy. I want to ask you, though, it's late December and they're still playing. Did the season, or at least the playoffs, drag on too long?
It's late January, you mean.
What did I say?
December.
Okay. It's late January.
So, yeah, I think they have to. So there's a couple things other than the obvious, right? Like this one. Can they condense this by 2 weeks? In other words, can they move the calendar 2 weeks? Are the buys in play? You know, is that one factor? I know it's a long, it is a long season. 17 games is a lot. And the week zero, maybe do you need a month of camp? Can you move the schedule up three? You know, can you start a week earlier? Can you condense the schedule? Because here's the thing, your championship game is now battling the NFL playoffs, right? Like, you're losing that. I'm sorry, but the conference, the college football championship game, I almost forgot it was Monday. It's kind of it became an afterthought to the Saturday, Sunday of the NFL and the divisional round, which is other than the Super Bowl, it's the biggest playoff round. It's two games over 2 days. You have to get away from that, because you're playing after that on Monday. You are off the radar, and I'm sure the ratings will reflect that. They have to get away from that, and they need to play this championship game on Saturday. Play it on Saturday. Move your schedule, set your championship game, and back everything up, because I think college football and their playoffs in year one, their biggest loss was they played their college championship game on a Monday night after the NFL weekend, and football fans were footballed out, and it kind of became a second fiddle.
I agree with that, Andy, and I think they need to work a bit with the NFL, because even like their first round of the playoffs, they played on Saturday, and so did the NFL playoffs. Could they do some work with the NFL so they're not directly conflicting with it up against the NFL directly? I also think, Andy,
move back 2 weeks, Jimmy. Move it back. Get your schedule condensed and move 2 weeks. Shorten the bye. Maybe one less bye and move to 1 week earlier start.
That's certain. That week zero, make that week one. instead of two buys, have one. You can move things up. I think also, Andy, then by playing games a bit earlier, you have two rounds of home playoffs. Because I think this is another issue. If you're a fan of a team and you want to follow your team through the playoffs, that is asking a lot to travel, say, 4 weeks to neutral field games. If you could get the first two rounds at home. Now, I understand the weather issue, and I prefer games played in at least decent weather. If you move it up a couple weeks, Andy, you and I, we live here in Pennsylvania. The weather in late November or first week of December is better than it is in late December or going into January also.
This will never be about the fans, Jimmy. Their priorities, and I'm not being a cutting-edge jackwagon. I'm just saying.
Oh, you are, Andy, but you're right. but you're right. It's not about the fans.
I agree with you. Like, give them more chances to see games, right? Like,
and the other part to that, Andy, is the demand for tickets. If you're asking people to follow their team this many weeks, they just can't do it. It costs too much money. They will come back to State College, though. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter two. Coming up, your questions, we ask Andy. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. We all know what that means. It's time to take your questions and we ask Andy. If you want to ask Andy a question, just download our app, Keystone Sports. Hit the Ask Andy button and away we go. Andy, let's start with our good friend, Jimmy from Forest City. He's got a fun question, or at least I think it's fun.
Aha.
Andy, which of these three statements do you think is most true?
Most true or most accurate? Most true. Okay.
Tom Allen wanted out of Penn State. Penn State wanted Tom Allen out of Penn State. Or Dabo Swinney wanted Tom Allen.
Ooh, Jimmy, that's a good one. So before as I'm contemplating this, I'm not filling to buy myself time because I think I have my answer. I like that we've hit the offseason now, right? The official offseason. And the questions are always better in the offseason from our listeners. You guys, all of you out there, because the season's a season, right? Like, we're talking about it. There's enough shows on KSN that we know we're talking a lot of football, so you can get a little bit of what you're looking for. Offseason, it's open season. It's my favorite for. This is a good one, Jimmy. I think it was Penn State wanted Tom Allen out of Penn State.
I think so too, Andy. Yeah. But go ahead.
It's this becoming the defensive coordinator at Clemson is a lateral at best. At best. Money isn't a hurdle at Penn State. It wasn't a money thing. So it wasn't a I think maybe it was another one of those cases. This has become my new favorite friend. Thank you. Oh, hold the door open. Thank you. And give you a big hug on the way out.
Yes. And I've used your quote on other shows, Andy, because I think it's appropriate. And I think it is the case. And
parting of ways would be another way to put it.
Yes.
Mutual agreement to part ways.
And I know I get called out on being a Manny Diaz fanboy, but two seasons ago, you know, we saw Manny Diaz's fingerprints on so much of what went right with the defense. I'm not sure I had many moments this year where I said, bingo, there's Tom Allen, fingerprints all over that great play.
So here's the thing that in the end, why I think it was a mutual agreement to part ways. Based on what this team had coming back and what on defense and the, it was never a difficult job to coordinate it. It would have been this good. Anyway, I think Tom Allen did an okay job. He did an adequate job. He did a job good enough to retain his job. He didn't do anything next level. Andy Kotelnicki and running the offense as the offensive coordinator, next level. Every day and twice on Sunday. Tom Allen's defense was just kind of exactly what the talent that Tom Allen had on defense at his disposal. Right?
Yep, exactly. So let's move on. Let's see how many more questions we can get to.
Good one, Carl, Jimmy.
Carl from Youngstown says, with the desperate need for wide receivers, is this team really better off without their two top wide receivers from last season? Obviously alluding to Trey Wallace and Amari Evans, who have hit the portal and found new homes.
Yeah, Trey Wallace ends up at Ole Miss, and Amari Evans is in Washington now. So this is a tough one. Good. Again, Carl, good job. Youngstown, one of my favorite Springsteen songs. I just had to throw that in there. I think they're better off, Jimmy, because I am under the opinion now that if they're going to keep Marcus, and they are as their wide receiver coach, it appears that this is where it has to be all done completely different. And I don't think either one of those players was happy with the way they were involved and used in the offense. And I'm not saying Wallace is a wide receiver one. I don't think he is. I think you have to do it differently, completely, like utterly and completely different. The only receiver they have coming back in that room with any Penn State experience is Liam Clifford. That's it. That's all we're going to start with. Everything else around it, we're going to do different. So the definition of insanity comes to mind here. They've been trying this and banging their head against the wall for at least two seasons, maybe the better part of three, clearly, and it continues to look the same. It has to be done differently. It might not be better. It might be worse. Not sure how that can happen, but it might be. But you have to do something different. And I think that's what Penn State's going to do. Go completely in a different direction.
Andy, I agree with you in saying that Omari Evans and Trey Wallace probably wish they were used a little bit differently, wish they were used more. I've always been a Trey Wallace advocate, and I think if you ask me just on the surface, would I like at least Trey Wallace back, if not both of them? My answer would have been yes, because I see some skill sets there that I think could benefit this team. The counter to it is what you said. If this is just sometimes you need a fresh start, someone might say this is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But I'm wondering, Andy, is if both those players indicated they were ready to move on, and it was similar to your statement about Tom Allen, where maybe those two receivers were ready to move on, but Penn State didn't show them the love. Hey, we really, really want you back. I think they would have accepted him back, but I think it was, oh, okay, you want to go? Here's a nice hug. I'll hold the door for you as you leave, even though I won't be slamming the door on you on your way out. All right, let's move on. Larry from New Jersey. Larry says, has James Franklin won a big game yet?
Yes. James Franklin has won a big game. He beat Ohio State once. And he's 0-2 in the Big Ten champ. No, he won a Big Ten championship, 2016, excuse me. He took his team to the Big Ten championship this year, and they won two college football playoff games. I don't care who the opponents are. I count those as big games. They're next level football games. Yeah, they got SMU at home and steamrolled them. There was some sticky stuff about the they had a matchup advantage, but there was some sticky stuff about Boise State, and they dominated that team. So that was impressive. I don't think he did anything against Notre Dame that was outside the box coaching-wise. I think it was one of his best performances, in my opinion, on a big stage as the head coach. I think that was the best I've ever seen James manage and coach a football game in a tight sort of 50-50 game. Nothing stood out. So I would say yes. I know where you're going, Larry, but, you know, they lost to Notre Dame. I don't think coaching had anything to do with that.
Andy, I really hate this narrative, the can't win a big game thing. I really don't like that narrative.
It's old.
It does. If you want to go down this path, to me, the better way to go down it is there a common thread among these big games that he has lost, which there is, which is he oftentimes gets the leads in these games. And, you know, we could go back to like 17, 18 against Ohio State, where he had double digit leads even into the fourth quarter. And this season alone, he had a 10-0 lead on Ohio State. He had a double digit lead against Notre Dame, and they ended up losing games when he has had double digit leads. I think that's where there's a legitimate question for him.
In the modern game, give James $15 million for roster retention and transfer portal. See what happens. That, you know what I mean? That I'm saying I'm being a devil's advocate.
And again, Andy, though, I'm not, like I said, I'm not, my issue is not with him losing those games. Those Ohio State teams are really, really good.
Yeah.
But he's had 10-point leads on them. Yeah. And even this game against Notre Dame, where, you know, it was an evenly matched game. It was talent-wise, but Penn State had a double-digit lead and couldn't hold on. My question is there any common thread there because of that? I think that point is at least debatable. Put aside that big game, can't win a big game thing. All right, let's go to Charlie in Hollidaysburg, who says, as much as I want to be excited by the 2025 team, they are still losing their best player on offense, Tyler Warren, and their best player on defense, Abdul Carter. How big are those losses, and how tough are they to overcome?
They are. That is true. Charlie, you are right. They are losing their two most productive football players, one on each side of the ball. But beyond that, they are in a better position than most. And you don't replace that. You cover that where you do more with less. And they've got a few guys that are still pretty special. So yes, will it have an impact? Yes. Will it change? Did they lose four of their top five? No, they just lost two. Just two, Jimmy. So I think they can cover this. I don't think it's that much of them. I think it's a concern, but it's not problematic. There's my big difference. It's not problematic.
Well, here's the thing also. Remember, this is college football. There will always be turnover.
Absolutely.
Go and look at Ohio State and how much they're losing in talent-wise. Yes, they're always able to replenish, but they're losing talent. If you're Oregon, you're losing Dylan Gabriel, okay? That's a major loss. And if you go through all of the top teams in the country, maybe they didn't lose two unique special talents like Penn State is, but they're losing more guys, more quantity talent. And Penn State, the other thing to look at, what's interesting, Andy, is as good as Tyler Warren is, you feel pretty good about the tight ends. as good as Abdul Carter is, you feel pretty good about the defensive line and defensive ends. Your biggest issue, it's still going to be the wide receivers. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter three. More to come in quarter four.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Thaddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. Andy, the topic of quarter number four, how about the 2025 Nittany Lions? Yep, it's time to shift gears, talk about that. And Andy, prior to the last couple of weeks where we started to get the players saying they're coming back, was this the window, the 23 and 24 season for Penn State? They had several players, you know, the Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, Katron Allen, Tyler Warren, Abdul Carter, Denai Dennis Sutton, on and on and on. This was their window.
KJ Winston,
who was out for the year. And you go and say, look, they got to the Final Four with this group. Obviously very talented, and there would be a huge talent drop-off going into next year. Lo and behold, Andy, the gang wants to come back and run it back.
They want to run it back. And when you say, talk about Penn State 2025 first look, Andy's response is offensive freaking line. That is where I start, Jimmy. Drew Shelton. So these are all guys that Drew Shelton, Bega Iwuanye, Nick Dawkins, Nolan Rucci, JB Nelson, Anthony Donka back from injury. The only loss is future NFL starting guard Sal Wormley. You like how I did that, Jimmy? I'm a big Sal Wormley guy. Lots of experience, simply not elite, but just does what he does. Cooper Cousins has to play, right? Like he's has to play. Everyone's like, that kid's got to play. Javon Williams, apparently coming back. I mean, Jimmy, you have four tackles, three guards, and a veteran returning at center. That's your bogey. And I'm using a military term there for the enemy, right? That's your bogey for defenses around the Big Ten. They're going to have to deal with that group week in and week out. That is where you start with Penn State's football team for 2025 for me. Yeah, I know. They got both running backs, a quarterback. They're deep in the tight end room. Wide receivers, still a dumpster fire and an absolute train wreck. They're the combination of both. Get it, got it, good. Offensive line, offensive line, offensive line. They were outstanding at pass blocking. They were elite at run blocking. They pushed the crap out of Notre Dame in that semifinal. They absolutely moved them out of the way and did what they wanted as a unit consistently over the course of those four quarters. They were an absolute beast of a group. And I just named, what, seven, eight guys that all have playing experience and are all scheduled to return as of right now. That is what I look at and start with when it comes to this Penn State team right up front.
Andy, I like that you started with the offensive line because it's easy to be blinded by the star power. Yep. Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, Zane Durant, Denai Dennis Sutton, those guys coming back. But it was the offensive line late in the year that, as good as Nick Singleton and Katron Allen were through the end of the season, that last third of the season, and they were phenomenal, Andy. And it's great that they're coming back, but it was the offensive line that made that all click. And you also brought up another point, which is the depth. There are seven players there with a lot of playing experience. And that's, you will have in that situation, JB Nelson not starting, apparently, and a third tackle, whether you have Drew Shelton, Anthony Duncan, Nolan Rucci, and you can only play two out of the three of them, Andy. That is what we call depth. And Billy, if there's one place you need it, it's on the offensive line, where those guys, they get hit on every play. Things happen, Andy. You need that depth on the offensive line.
Yeah, I'd say they have four tackles. They have three tackles that all started and played regularly. And everything I saw to Javon Williams said he's ready too. So, that's where it's going to start next. Yes. I think the offensive line also allows Andy Kotelnicki as the offensive coordinator to be a little more of a mad scientist and be creative, because he can, it's a lot of eye candy and stuff, but he can also dare to do a few different things because he knows his offensive line and what they can do. In other words, it's the sort of thing where some of my Penn State friends are, why don't we just run the ball? It allows them to do some things differently because they know they'll be able to run the ball. And yeah, it's where it starts and ends with me, Jimmy, right up front on the offensive line.
And Andy, you mentioned Javon Williams playing tackle. He could also play guard. You also brought in TJ Shanahan as a potential interior lineman. So there is a lot of depth there on the offensive line. But, you know, we've got to talk about the obvious issue, which is that wide receiver, because, you know, one of our listeners sent in the issue of losing Tyler Warren. Obviously a loss. You're not going to have the same kind of player, but you're still going to be very good at tight end. There is the depth there. But at wide receiver, you struggled last year, but as much as you struggled, you're still losing, Trey Wallace, Amari Evans, Julian Fleming. Those were the three guys who probably got the most snaps at wide receiver, Andy. You bring in two players from outside, Kyren Hudson from USC, Devontae Ross from Troy. They're the presumed starters.
Liam Clifford. He got a lot of snaps too, Jimmy.
He did probably. I would think he was fourth among those. But regardless, Andy, you know, I hope they're not done.
I'm ready. Okay, Jimmy, I'm ready. I have my wide receiver stance for this offseason. I kind of figured out why maybe the wide receivers were showing the door, giving a hug, and said thank you on the way out. And they come. It's a numbers thing for me. This is how I was able to land on this. Did you know, Jimmy, 38%. Of the pass completions for Penn State last season. That's 111 out of 292 completions went to wide receivers. That's abhorrent, Jimmy. That's just bad, right? As a wide receiver room group in an offense. Does it have a little bit to do with Tyler Warren? Of course, yeah, the dude's ridiculous. But that kind of low number, okay, maybe it should be 50, 52%, even if Tyler Warren's doing what he does. I think my stance on what they're going to do at wide receiver position is, other than just shaking my head and closing my eyes and sort of shrinking my shoulders and going, oh my gosh, it's the same as it ever was. You can find 38% anywhere. How are we going to make it better than 38%? That is the task. I think that's the mindset. We have to do it completely different, because if we kept what we already had, 38% was what it was going to look like in 2025. It can't look like that again and this team get to the next level. It just simply can't. So you have to look at that and say, this was our production. We could find that anywhere. You can get that low of a production pretty much anywhere, especially with a quarterback like Drew Aller and the running backs and offensive line to support it. Still good at the tight end position. How do we make it better?
Andy, I also look at it a little different in that I know the separation between here's a wide receiver, here's a tight end. They are different positions. But when you start moving these guys around,
I get it.
You know, they're receivers, okay?
I get it.
They're job is to catch passes. And whether I label it TE or WR doesn't really matter. Now, I understand that the tight ends aren't typically the guys that you say are over the top. But when you're playing two tight end sets, you're saying now, okay, two of these guys that we call receivers just happen to be a little bit bigger, so we have TE next to their name versus WR. I know, there is a difference. I get it. But they're there to catch passes. So I think the weapons are so good elsewhere. The offensive line's so good. The running backs are so good. The running back could be used out of the backfield catching the ball. The tight ends, you're going to have multiple tight ends. Maybe we're saying the same thing differently. I don't think you necessarily need to make the wide receivers great. How about just making them okay?
But Andy, can I go real quick, Jimmy?
Real quick.
When the wide receivers move out to a position of catching a pass, you cared as a defense, the opposing defense. You didn't care about the wide receivers. You just stuck somebody on them. You knew you could win that battle. You had to care and scheme for the tight ends. You didn't care about the wide receivers. That's it.
Let me bring that up. You also got to look at Omari Evans was a guy you had to worry about going over the top.
That's
Trey
it.
Wallace has physical tools. So that's why I wonder about that loss. All right, Andy, how about other positions? We dwell on wide receiver. I'm sure we're going to be talking about them all off season. Where else do you see some need for Penn State? What positions are there?
The only other one I land on is cornerback, right? Corner. I think they might need some outside assistance as well, right? A.J. Harris coming back. Cam Miller went to the portal. I think a Davion Collins showed some promise. They're thin at the corner position as we see it right now, right? I think they're a little thin there, Jimmy. Just, you know what I mean? Like, they're not desperate, but they're thin, right? I think they're desperate at the wide receiver position. They're just a wee thin at corner. That's all I'm going to say. I just think it's a little thin and they might need a little boost there.
Okay. The other one, A.J. Harris, Elliot Washington is there also. But, yeah, I could see they could use another cornerback. What about linebacker, Andy? I think they like someone like Tamir Robinson, but I think Kalen King was a loss.
Yeah, it's a loss. They have to find an on the ball inside. They need to find a linebacker. They have to make something. They have to find that. They have to find the guy, right? I think they're good at off the ball linebacker, but I think, you know, sort of the man in the middle, and I think it's a 4-2-5 again. But whoever the DC is, I just think they're going to have to find that. That's something they're going to have to find. Something tells me they know they have a potential. Somebody's already there, and they're looking at it. That's my instincts.
I think you're right. Kalen King was the guy who I thought was the most sure tackler among the linebackers. So hopefully they will be able to replace that position. All right, Andy, as always, it goes way too fast, but that is it. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.